Hi, everybody, and welcome to Telich Talks. Mitch Hewitt is a two-time state champion coach of the Chardon High School Hilltoppers football team. He's a Hilltopper for life. Hewitt was a standout as a high school football player, leading his team, the Hilltoppers, to a state finals appearance under legendary coach Bob Doyle back in the 90s. In our conversation, we're going to hit on many points, such as, what is the main reason for Chardon High School success? What was it like to play for Urban Meyer at Bowling Green State University? Urban was just starting out as the head coach of a big program, and Mitch was one of the top players on the team and the leaders as well. And their relationship continues to this day. Hewitt talked about his regard for his fellow coaches in the high school football fraternity, like Boers and Grubich, Tiger Laverty, Ted Ginn, and others. We also talked about the love affair that kids and also society has with the telephone, the small cell phone that's everywhere you are, and also how social media and the telephone, the cell, bad combination for young people. We talked about the college transfer portal and the effects that it is having on the recruiting process and on just the development of a young person's ability to believe in themselves. Hewitt is also a teacher at Chardon and an entrepreneur. Our conversation's coming up, but first, the Cooper Foundation has been lifting up children and young adults with special needs since 2015. Sometimes you just need a helping hand. Now, our conversation. Mitch Hewitt, Chardon High School Hilltoppers. Hope you enjoy. Mitch, welcome to the pod. We go back quite a few years. I can recall young Mitch Hewitt playing Hilltopper football.
Yeah, it's incredible. John, first, thanks for having me on. I remember at our old practice field, you interviewing me as a player, either in my junior or senior year, and now here we are. I'm 42, which I'm not going to do the math, but that makes you still pretty young.
I'll take it. Whatever you say I am, I'll be the guy that says he's that young. I'll take that any day of the week. Tell me, what's the secret to Topper football?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that go into it. I think the fact that we've had three head coaches over 40 plus years creates like a continuity that I think is important. Some of it, like right now, we're in generational football, right? We have sons playing, doing similar things that their dads did.
Cool.
So we've maintained that culture. At the end of the day, it's parents. It's parents in every city, state, community that ultimately direct the ship. I think coaches have a large role in the development of people, but I think parents ultimately, if you have tough parents, tough moms, you're going to have a pretty good chance of having pretty tough football players, and that's one thing I think we've maintained.
How was that for you as a youngster? Did you have folks that really held your feet to the fire, as it were?
Yeah, and again, it's one of the things that I've tried to model as a parent. I'm not always successful, but it's you want to try to create environments for kids to be uncomfortable. Not to sink, but if they spend their entire life at the edge of the water, that there's no development. So we try to put kids in uncomfortable situations. Controlled discomfort is what we call it, and through that process we usually see a lot of growth, and parents have allowed us to do this. I think you see the world changing. I think you see a softening of society and culture, and I'm not saying we're brutal or doing anything bad, but it's just a change that's taking place across the country, and I think mental health has become more of an issue. Like when you interviewed me back when I was in high school, no one even knew what that was. Now it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Social media has changed the game, right? So kids are a little bit more fragile in that regard, and we've tried to maintain a level of intensity, and I think our kids have embraced it, and more importantly, our parents.
That's cool. Now, how did you maintain your positive nature when, as a young athlete, there's certain to be moments when you don't have that success?
It's coaches. It's people in your life. It's a bedrock foundation. It's real relationships, not the fake followers and the fake likes. Mm-hmm. It's finding real people in your corner that you can still pick up the phone and call when you're down. And everyone needs it. And I don't think you get to a point in your life where That goes away. I tell our players all the time, it's not like you hit age 30 and you have all the answers, or that all your days are good and that you don't need that phone call, that phone a friend. So I think it's important to develop real relationships, lasting relationships. And again, I think that's the beauty of sports, and it's what it does differently than in the classroom. Not saying that it can't be done in the classroom or at a job, but there's a sweat and a bleeding and a hardship that people do together. It's modeled after the military approach.
Well, in your particular town where the titles have come and the tradition is there, would I surmise that there's just such an inherent love of the sport itself, Mitch, or is it a love of winning, which of course is the ultimate objective anyway?
It is, and I think you're right. I think it's a culture that's been established. I saw a stat the other day that said like three of the last four NBA championship winning coaches have all been fired.
Yeah.
So certainly winning helps, right? But it's like you'll hear these people that are complaining about other coaches' programs, and I'm sure people are complaining about me. I'm sure I have a bunch of people that would love to see me go. But what I would say is that we still have an ability to be tough on kids, but I think because there's a relationship with our kids, there's a flexibility in that, right? Like if kids don't know how much you love them, then you can't be hard on them. But if they know you care and you're not calling them out, you're calling them up. Like, you're trying to get them to reach their full potential. And without people like that in your life, it's hard to do independently because we are naturally lazy human beings, and it's way easier to stay in shallow water than it is to swim out.
Who are some of your role models, as it were? Coaches, people in the neighborhood, that type of stuff.
Yeah, I've had great coaches. I mean, my mom was a single mom, pretty tough lady, so she helped keep me on the straight and narrow. I had a grandpa and grandma who were very much in my life because my mom would work third shift and tend bar on the weekends. Coach Doyle was probably my first role model, who at age 17, even though I was an idiot, said, you know, I want to get into coaching and teaching. And then throughout college.
Is that because of him, I assume?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Coach Doyle, and he still runs a leadership class for my team. So you talk about continuity. I have Tim Armelli, Hall of Fame coach, Bob Doyle, Hall of Fame coach, coming back on Wednesdays, speaking on leadership and accountability and commitment and all the things that I think are slipping away through society. And then you get to college, and I've been baptized by some of the best coaches. Not always easy. You know, I mean, I tell this to anyone who will listen, is that like I called home several times and said, I can't do this. This is it. And had I not had people that kept me in the fire, I would have probably missed out on my greatest opportunities and really who I am today. So that's when I go back to parents. Like, I can get a kid to play if I know the parents are involved. If the parents are, no, he can go, he doesn't need to do it, then it's a hard sell.
Yeah, it's very difficult. You're kind of like trying to fight a fight with one arm tied behind
your back. It's 100%.
And you just can't get enough traction if the loving environment isn't there towards the young person that you're trying to mold.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we all want the path of least resistance. I mean, until we figure it out, like, we all want to be comfortable. I mean, that's like...
We want our hacks, right?
That's exactly right. That's human nature. And it's even worse now that there was more polling kids. Like we didn't have a phone. We didn't have video games. You know, I mean, now there is so much vying for their attention that creates comfort. I had a student the other day tell me that TikTok should either be banned or it should be over the age of drinking, because he goes, I can spend 5 hours on that thing and barely blink. And it's like that's it. I say it's the only accepted addiction that all of society has. Like, you almost giggle about, oh, I spent 7 hours on my phone yesterday. Like,
right.
It's crazy, and that's their intent. They want our time.
Yeah, as you just mentioned, that's their intent. That's what they want. They want you to want that dopamine rush.
That's exactly
that you
right.
get when someone likes a post that you had.
Yep.
And I think people also steer their behaviors and their posts on social media to get people to like it, as opposed to putting out there what's real.
It's totally crazy.
And I could be guilty of that too. To be honest,
I mean, we all are. I mean, like believe me, it's when I preach to my students and my players, like, I admit fault, and part of why I say it publicly to my players is that it holds me accountable. Like you're speaking it loud, like you speak things into being, you speak things into existence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to have a soundboard. If you're going to start a new activity for the month or a new goal for the month, make it public, make it known, because then there's a little bit more accountability that can help sort of see you through that goal. But
yeah,
no doubt,
I agree with you on that. I think sometimes if, you know, you want to lose 10 pounds or 15, 20 pounds, run a 5-mile race, If you put it out there, there is a little bit more onus on you to kind of, and I imagine you do the same thing when you're coaching. You put plausible, attainable goals for your kids to work towards so that they can get that community of support from one another that makes them successful, makes them do the task.
Yeah, very much.
Closer to a victory, let's
say. Yeah, very much. I mean, and again, you hit the nail on the head. It's tiny tweaks, right? Like it's where most people's goals go aside. It's like if you say, I want to win a state title. No, that's too big of a goal, right? Yeah. Or I want to lose 50 pounds, or I want to work out every day of the week. If you haven't done any of that, you have to start smaller. You have to win achievable goals. And for some of these kids and some of these adults, myself included, it's you have to chip away at it. It's not one big swing. Mm-hmm. It's tiny swings that will break the rock.
Well, you said earlier, Bob Doyle, a big influence for you. You went away to play college football at Bowling Green. Urban Meyer was just kind of, cutting his teeth as being a big-time college coach. What was he like then, and what kind of influence did he have on you?
I can say this because I'm friends with him, but he was a nobody, really, like when he walked in the room. He was a position coach from Notre Dame. He was a wide receivers coach. I know as a team, we were 2-9. We were like the Bad News Bears. And this guy immediately changed the culture. And believe me, it wasn't all sunshine and roses. He is the opposite, I would say, of a player's coach. Like, he'll warm up to you after a while, but there's a very much intense fear-based mentality that's been successful for him. He's 100 miles per hour. We were talking to you earlier off camera that there's a million different ways to win. Mm-hmm. And he certainly found his niche. And it's the intensity in which he does things that I think to some degree I've taken on, because Bob Doyle was not like that. But what I tell people is coaching is all, one, it's a fraternity of misery.
With very few elation moments.
Even having won a state title, like, it's fun for like a few weeks, and then you're like thinking about the next year's opponent, and like it's losses last forever, and wins, you know, half the time you're thinking about the next week's opponent already, without any time to enjoy it. But it's I had 5 position coaches and I had 3 head coaches. So for me, that was a college course in coaching. And okay. At the time, it was kind of frustrating. But looking back on it, I think the good Lord had a plan in place. And it allowed me to see what worked and what didn't, mm-hmm. who connected with kids, and all the other intangibles that go with it.
And you said right from the jump that Urban did connect, but there was a toughness to his demeanor. Maybe playing amateur psychologist here, he had a rough upbringing, I understand, by having a father that was very, very demanding. Yeah. Maybe that's part of what makes the fabric of an Urban Meyer.
There's no doubt. I mean, there's, you lose, you get hot dogs with no buns. You win, you get steaks. You're treated like winning is treated differently than losing. And I think it creates all great competitors, right? They hate to lose more than they love to win. And that's very much his mantra. Don't get me wrong. Like he was young and it's a Bowling Green and it's pre-ESPN and he was able to get away with some things that he would not have been able to get away with at Ohio State, nor have the faculty to do it. So I'm grateful for Coach Meyer, and I've told him that to his face.
Well, he's certainly built an incredible culture, legacy, in all the teams that he's coached and just elevated them, and the titles certainly speak for themselves. And you mentioned earlier about Bob Doyle. He was a great figure in your life. He was a winner. He did have a state championship. And he kind of established a brand of football, right?
I mean,
the way you guys run your offense, has done it for many years.
Yep.
I joke about this, Mitch, when I send a cameraman to shoot a Chardon game, I said, you got to be really on your toes or you're going to be following the wrong kid with
That's
the football,
exactly, yeah.
And it's going to happen a lot.
Yep.
How did that evolve, or has it evolved?
I mean, it's Coach Doyle went back to Delaware where they were running a wing T, and they ran a very traditional wing T. So when people say you run the wing T, we run like a pistol wing T variation, spread formation. Like, we'll be in shotgun half the series, maybe sometimes the entire game. We can go 5 wide, we can go 4 wide. So it's not like how it was when I played, but it's the same principles. It's the same concept. It's the same thought that running breeds toughness. And usually if you can run the ball, you can stop the run. And what we found and what we've hung our hat on is playing great defense. And really, we're a small, mid-sized public school. So we don't get talent. We can't go recruit it. We're not a nine county all-star team. We have to play with who lives in our community. So yeah. This type of offense has allowed us to have success when we have no business of having success, despite what their mommies and daddies would say.
Okay.
It just allows us to be competitive. And like we can slow down a clock, right? Like if we're playing against a high explosive offense and we're not that good, we can play ball control. And our kids are comfortable with 3.5 yards. Like they've learned to deal with that. And it's very much like what Tiger does. You know what I mean? Like he's not complicated. We joke about that all the time, you know? And even Coach Ginn. Like these guys are winning with pretty basic things in place.
You know, it seems like all the great coaches know that there's going to be temptations to step outside of the box of what you are as an offense or as a defense. And you see it on the pro level, you know, that they're hoping that Mahomes, let's say, gets impatient and won't take those mm-hmm. 7-yard throws mm-hmm. or whatever, and then tries to bite off a big chunk and gets burned on occasion. And that's, as a coach, you have to guard against that almost every play.
You totally hit the nail on the head. It is so hard to watch offense and not, and I'm talking like NFL, college, and then be like, oh, why don't we run this play? But if you're going to run that play, that means you're taken away from something that, you do well. And it's, believe me, like I fall in that trap too. Unfortunately, I have enough people to tell me, no, like it just dedicates too much time. And what people fail to realize is that, like, in the NFL and in college football, like, their offense for 2.5 hours runs offense. Our offensive guys go play defense. You know what I mean? So once the season starts, you're looking at, like, 5 hours of practice. And it's and then you cut that in half, you're looking at 2 hours, 2.5 hours of practice. So it's just too difficult to try to do it all as much as our fan base would like. I mean, it's funny. We've gotten to the point sometimes where we do throw the ball and people will actually yell from the stands, run the ball. That's when you know you're in Chardon.
Well, yeah, you've made your bones doing it that way. It's been very successful. If I were to just point out a typical Chardon High School football player, is there such a thing? Am I being overly simplistic on all this?
Oh, no, I don't think that's the case. I mean, I'd like to think that they're hard-nosed.
Okay.
They're selfless.
That was one of the first words I was thinking of, was the hard-nosed.
Yeah, there's like no matter where we go, we want to be able to plant a flag and win, lose, or draw, the other team better go, whoa, like that wasn't fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like we never want to be cute. We never want to be known as like the person who loses the violent aspect. You know, it's like a word that gets misconstrued in the public eye, but the game of football is still winning the line of scrimmage. Like the game itself is very simple. It's one of the reasons why NFL teams spend so much money on D linemen and offensive linemen, because it's still one up front.
Yeah, and they've got to win those battles, or there's no nothing to celebrate. And
no one looks good in the backfield.
No, exactly. Well, you had an opportunity as a high school football player to play in a state championship, and then you've coached in state championships. Certainly there are differences. One's a player, one's a coach. I get that. But are there any similarities to how you approach the game as that senior year when you were playing for the Hilltoppers, or those times that you took your team to a state title game?
It's just a lot easier to be a player. You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, you're responsible for yourself, and you know, you're a captain, you have a responsibility to your team, but like for the most part, you're responsible for yourself. As a coach, it's far more intense, far more stressful, so many I's to dot and T's to cross and things to manage. And, I want to do it again. So I don't want to, mm-hmm. Sit up here and say like it's it was all bad, but it's way easier to be a player than it is to be a coach.
How is it trying to run your family? You've got some young kids that are athletes. You're juggling businesses. You're obviously coaching a football team. Got to wear a bunch of different hats. How's that been for you?
It's really all I've known, and it's what I enjoy. You know, when I think I get maxed out, and then like the winter comes, and I get a little bit of down, then I get restless. So I go look for things to create and do. So I get up at crack of dawn, and I go to bed fairly late. I'm a 4.5-5 hour sleep guy, and I'm surrounded by great people. I got a great staff. I got a great wife. I got great kids. great administration. We have great employees. Like, that is the name of the game if you want to be successful in life, is surround yourself with good people. I know less about football today than I did 12, 13 years ago when I started as head coach, because I've surrounded myself with coaches who can do so much of the X's and O's. I know a lot about scheduling buses, raising funds, dealing with grades and parents and speaking at engagements. But I've been blessed to be around great people. And that's the skill everyone should try to adopt.
Well, Hilltopper football has been successful for so many years. And in recent times, you have those two titles to fall back on and to enjoy. And that's incredible. And congratulations on that. But there was a real dark moment that's been very well documented, Mitch, the shootings at the school years back. How difficult of a time was that for you? And you kind of had to help the school get through it, as being the football coach and being kind of a figure that everybody would look up to.
You're certainly in a role that requires more leadership, but to whom much is given, much is required. It's biblical in sense. Frank Hall has been a legendary figure. We had a tremendous administration. Coach Snyder, who is our AD, Andy Fetchick, who actually works here now at Mayfield. There was just so many great people. The community, really, I mean, it brought everyone closer together. And it's something that you pray never happens anywhere else again, but in the right community, it actually unites everyone, and that's what we saw. And it's the light on the hill will always shine. And again, that's a passage of scripture, and I think to some degree our community has embraced that. And it's no comparison to 9/11, but it's like I tell my class, I go, I think that was the last time our nation was united. You know what I mean? And you hate to think that, like, it takes a tragedy to bring people together, but it reminds you of how fragile life is. And I think we have a tendency to think that we're invincible and that, like, tomorrow is just guaranteed. And it's a reminder that it's not. You know, we had a terrible car accident where we lost the lives of two students, one of my players, you know, speaking at his funeral are things that, you don't think about when you're 20 years old and you're like, I want to get into coaching. It's a blessing to be in the lives of the people that I've been a part of. And, God willing, we'll get a few more years out of it, too.
Well, Mitch, this fraternity that we have here in Northeast Ohio, a lot of these coaches, of course, you mentioned Coach Doyle, who helped mold you. But there's a lot of outstanding. You also did, I think, mention Tiger in passing there as well. There's so many great members of this fraternity that you guys have. Speak to, if you can, just how it is maneuvering yourself day in and day out, having those relationships with people that you want to beat and want your kids to learn lessons from as well, both in a winning situation or even losing.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head as far as, like, Northeast Ohio football and, like, the level of coaching up here. And there's just no gimmies. You know, it's not like other states or other parts of the area. I mean, it's such an investment of time for most people that the quality of competition is always there. And it's I joke about it that it's a fraternity of misery, because it's like we love to coach, but, like, there's something about coaching. It's like it's the high and the low of your, like, life. Like, you don't know if it's preserving your life or ending your life. And it's an intensity that's rare. I look at Dave Boers. Like, I hate everything about Riverside. And I mean that in a competitive, loving manner.
Yeah, they've really come on.
And they're so good. And they're so, I love the competition, the neighbor, the crosstown rival. But Dave Boers is an unbelievable human being, right? Like Grubich at Kenston. He and I probably butt heads more than any other coach on my schedule. But I have the utmost respect for what he's been able to do at that place. So it's guys like that, that, like, at the end of the day, we're all in this together. And we've all lost. So you have to remind yourself of that. Like there's no computer points to run up the score. There's no benefit in making a 16-year-old feel worse than they do after they've lost. So for us, it's keeping that in mind and knowing that as soon as you're on top, you could very easily be at the bottom. And I think in Northeast Ohio football, us coaches get that. Again, we had the opportunity to play Coach Ginn in 2021. It's an unbelievable relationship. We brought both teams together at midfield, and their pastor prayed over it. And again, you could probably get fired for that in this day and age. But it's funny. It's politicians and people want unity until you get unity in a way that they don't like, and then you don't want unity.
Yeah.
So, you know, Coach Ginn's the perfect guy to bridge that gap. And it was an unbelievable, powerful moment of two different cultures and teams joining hands and praying. And then they went out there and they beat the snot out of each other. You know, I mean, it's something great about high school sports that is so pure. I'm not a pro sport guy. And I think it's insane the amount of money people will spend to go watch a pro athlete, but they won't pay $7 or $8 to go watch the kid down the street who's maybe got 2 or 3 years to play under the lights.
Yeah, like right now we're sitting here at a high school track meet, and there's, you know, so many outstanding young athletes that are out competing in the various events, and what you had to pay to get in there was absolutely minuscule, if you want to be perfectly honest about that. And and I think that's the beauty of high school sports. A lot of people kind of overlook that. They want, what school did you go to? It had to be the biggest, most elite school, and I think that's utter nonsense.
Yeah, amen. And it's like if I had my way, I would ban all phones from high schools, and I would make every kid have to participate in something, whether it's band, drama, the fall play, a talent. Like we need more kids off their devices and around human beings. We weren't designed to be isolated. You know what
right.
I mean? I just don't believe that.
And I agree.
I'm an idiot, so everything I'm saying could be totally wrong. You know, I'm a teacher, who am I? But having done this for as long as I have, I look at a classroom today and it's different than it was 10 years ago. And, you know, the outlying factor is...
technology.
Yeah. And it's, again, I'm as guilty as anyone, but it's you got to constantly remind yourself because it's a drug. And you got to pay attention to it.
Yeah, you really do. So what's your prospects for your team this year, without getting into, you know, exactly who's starting here or who's starting there, just the general vibe that you have after last year's campaign?
Our numbers are good. You know, it's as a Division III program, you know, I mean, we could be close to 80 kids, 10th through 12th. I think you always struggle at the freshman level to retain people. You could win state championship after state championship, and some kid who's like in a 1% program is going to pass up a rare opportunity to be a part of something. And it's like I had two kids today come in and say, Coach, I think I want to play football. Where do I sign up? I said, just start coming, man. I mean, there's no signups anymore. Just start coming. And I told them straight up, I go, you're late to the game. You may never see the field, but Chardon football will not leave you void. You know what I mean? Like the game and the investment. I told someone this the other day. I was at a local restaurant, and someone came up to me, and he gave me the classic. I wish I would have played. Now, I'm sure there's a handful out there, maybe, but I've never had anyone come up to me and say, Coach, I wasted 3 years of my life playing for Chardon football. I've never heard it. I've never heard it from any coach, but I've heard it a bunch of times of, I wish I would have played. And that's where you need that parent support, that parent drive, mm-hmm. to see that there's very few things left. And we tell our kids all the time, like, I can count on one hand how many people genuinely care about me. But a 16-year-old in a high school program, outside of Chardon football, anywhere, this track team that we're watching right here, there are more grown adults that care about a lot of these kids than they will ever have the rest of their lives, because they're checking on their grades, they're checking on their home life, they're checking on their meals, they're checking on their rest and recovery. You know, it's special, and people should be a part of it.
Yeah, it seems so fun to watch just the purest aspect of high school sports, and it just comes right down to the basics, is that you have coaches that care, parents that are involved, kids are buying in because they have some success.
Amen.
And that success is kind of like, you know, what feeds them, and then they start to think about you know, how their life will go for them if they go to college and play sports.
And that's like what we also try to cover too, is that most people aren't going pro. We're preparing you for a job, for fatherhood, for being a husband. Walk the schools now and say, you'll find people that you'll be like, man, this person's gonna be hard to employ. And there's no one in their life trying to bring them back into that scope of reality. Because again, I think society has created so many comforts that it allows us to develop late, both mentally and physically.
Yeah.
And with sports or band or drama or cheerleading, whatever it may be, it creates some level of accountability that we all need, because if left to our own vices, we're in trouble. Again, I'm an idiot. You know what I mean? I fall short daily. but I'm surrounded by enough people to lift me up.
How do you get a kid to steer their thoughts towards, you can go beyond this high school, very strong high school football program, but you can do more than this. You can go to college and play some football. What's the process like?
That's a good question. I mean, again, I think it's sort of like, again, we got a pretty good player right now who's young, and he's in the recruiting process, and I think he's got an opportunity to go to the Power Five schools. But again, he's young, and it's like sometimes, like all of us, we want the instant gratification. You hit on dopamine. We want the instant dopamine.
Yeah.
But the path to success is long, and it's very narrow. Hmm. And a lot of times, you got to embrace things that you absolutely despise until you reach the reward.
Right.
And I just think we've become like a reset generation, right? Because like these kids are growing up on video games. So the minute they don't like the outcome, they hit reset. Well, they're trying to do that in real life, and it just doesn't work that way. I mean, it can for a while, but eventually it catches up to you. So I think that the talented kids that have college aspirations and ability are easier to coach in some ways, or almost they can be like on their own, than the kid who's like I have the most respect for. We have a young man who came out this year, has never played football before, has never lifted weights. I'm telling you, John, he is at every single workout. And he looks around. He sees where he is in relationship to the people that he's competing with. But he's getting better. His goals are different than the kid who's going to play for the Power Five. But that doesn't mean that every single day he can't win the day.
Yeah.
Like, your definition of winning the day is different than my definition. But as long as we're all moving forward in our own increments, we made the most of the day. Yeah. So it's not comparing people. The college kids are easy. Like those kids are motivated by NIL deals and where they're going. It's the kid who's third string, who's a senior or a junior, who adds value. And I think it's one of the things that we really try to highlight on our team is kids who add value. Like, we usually at the end of a practice, we'll go around and give shout outs. Like, I want players to get used to complimenting people in person. Because you can send a text, happy birthday. This generation can't make a phone call, right?
Or write a note.
And we talk about that all the time. The power of the note is the only thing I keep.
Save them all.
Amen,
brother.
Amen. I can't tell you what I got for Christmas or my birthday, but every note, every student, player, parent has given me is in a desk drawer. And someday on my deathbed, God willing, I'm going to open that up and I'm going to look through those. And we talk about the power of the pen. And we try to highlight individuals who are adding value. And you don't need to be a superstar to do that.
Can you raise others up? That's the kind
Amen.
Of cuts it down.
Amen. It's who have you made better? Who have you brought? Like, we have a rule, man. You can't go to the football field by yourself. If you're doing that, it's selfish. And a kid may be like, what do you mean, coach? I'm trying to get better. No. You're not bringing anyone with you. That's
making
the whole
them
goal.
Better.
Like, imagine if everyone went to separate gyms and worked out. You know, if that was successful, Ohio State and LSU and Georgia would be doing that.
Well, we also have people in same rooms but in separate realities because they're all on their phones and they're within yards of each other.
Yeah.
And that's just where we've come.
Yeah.
Kahari Hicks with the Build the Bridge program, I mean, he has done a phenomenal job with bringing schools together with kids that don't look like each other, and I think that's great. But I got to give a shout-out to Bob Doyle. He did that years ago, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you could argue, I mean, I'm dating myself a little bit here, but 25, 26 years ago, we did sort of an exchange program where we went to Cleveland South, which is it's a defunct school. It's closed down. And we did an exchange, Cleveland South football players came to Chardon for the day, and then some Chardon football players went to Cleveland South. And I remember my senior year during our playoff run, like going to state, and seeing Cleveland South players in the stands cheering for the Hilltoppers. And, I don't know where all those kids ended up, but I hope somewhere they are. It's like they remember that moment, too, because I do. And I've been blessed to be a part of a lot of neat things, and that's something that stands out in my high school career.
That is very cool. Let's jump ahead to you're at college, kids at school, and then nowadays we're seeing so many kids jumping into the transfer portal. Is that a part and parcel to, again, getting back to like
social
media?
It's the recent generation.
And you being told that, you know, you're great, and yet you have a little bit of hardship and you don't want to see it through. I'm sure there's exceptions, maybe like a Joe Burrow who was not given the time of day allegedly, and then, you know, went somewhere and kind of made people notice him.
Yeah, it's I don't want to say it's destroying college football, but it's I've had coaches come in who say we can't build culture anymore. Yeah. 5 years ago, I had college coaches that would strut in, you know, with their big salaries and yeah, who you got for me. These coaches come in now beleaguered. I mean, they're beat down because the minute they leave, they got to go and call their players on their own team and make sure they don't leave.
They got to recruit their own.
They got to recruit their own. It's like going home and making sure your own kids love you. And it's the NCAA, which I believe in the NIL. Like I think the NCAA is kind of like the federal government. Like they're all the people at the top can all make the money, but then no one at the bottom can't. So I agree that kids should get paid. I think there needs to be, you know, like everything has to be reined in a little bit. I think a transfer portal has a place. I don't think it can be as long as it is. 40% of kids aren't ending up on full scholarships. So they're walking away thinking that they're going to be the next guy who's going to get picked up, and 40% aren't. And what's happened to us is I have a great high school football player who any other year is at least a MAC player. But the Mid-American Conference, which used to take, say, 25 kids, high school kids, is now taking 10.
And they're getting transfer portals
because if you're, take my alma mater, if you're a dominant left tackle at Bowling Green, say, Bowling Green might have been your only offer. If you have a hell of a year, Purdue's going to offer you $50,000 to go play at Purdue. And now Bowling Green can't replace that kid with a kid. They got to go find a man to replace you with in the portal.
Yeah.
So it's really affected high school athletes. And I think D2s are benefiting from it. I think Youngstown States can benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
And Power Fives don't care. You know, like Ohio State can still get the best high school athlete in the country. But like the MAC, like I think about it today. If I was a high school athlete, there's no way I'd be a Division I player.
Really? It would just be that difficult?
I think it'd be a lot harder for sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. What a way to end this thing. Wow, you just dropped a bomb on me. I'm just kidding.
John, I could talk to you for hours.
Same here. This has been a great conversation here at Mayfield High School. We're watching track meet down below. We've kind of commandeered one of the coaches' booths, as it were, and always have had a great deal of respect for you, young man, what you did in high school. I still remember you playing the state championship game, severely injured. You had a bad shoulder, and you kept playing, and you went away, and you made your mark in college football, and you're back in your home area selling ice cream and leading kids to better futures.
Yeah, and I can't thank you enough for what you've done for local sports. And tomorrow, I'm not happy about this, but I'm going to get on the treadmill because you just ran 70-some miles like a week ago. So now my 220 pounds are going to get on a treadmill tomorrow. So I'm gonna cuss you tomorrow morning at 5:45 a.m. But know that it's out of love and respect. So I appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Mitch. Mitch Hewitt, Chardon High School.
Thanks very much to Mitch for our great conversation. Also, it was great to meet his wife, his family, as we were at the Mayfield High School track where there was a conference meet going on. Had a great chance to sit up in that booth there and converse while watching some of the track and fields. Kind of a great combination. By the way, folks, to date, we have done 91 episodes of Telich Talks. We started the podcast in April of the year of 2019. We did about 60 episodes from then all the way up until the pandemic in April of 2020. Then we suspended it. A few things happened in the interim, such as I retired from Fox 8, only to continue to do high school football, Friday Night Touchdown, which I will never give up. So after my retirement, I decided to reboot the episodes, and we started back up again, and we've done 31 episodes since the restart or the reboot, and we have interviewed a whole bunch of high school coaches in those 91 episodes spanning back to 2019. We've talked to the likes of Tiger Laverty from Kirtland, Ted Ginn Sr., Chuck Kyle, Max Stevens, and Steve Trevisano, to name a few. And Tiger, his episode was the most downloaded of all the episodes of Telich Talks that I have done. I think people really want to know what makes a successful person the success that they are. So perhaps the fervent followers of Chardon High School Hilltopper football will allow Mitch Hewitt to eclipse Tiger. Time will tell. Thanks very much for listening, everybody, and we'll see you the next time around on Telage Talks.